This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Sean Lay. Thanks for downloading the BBC's World Tonight podcast from Friday the 28th of June. After a disastrous performance in his televised debate with Donald Trump, are leading Democrats forming a human shield around Joe Biden or a firing squad? Is Nigel Farage right when he complains that the apparent exposure by undercover filming of Reform UK supporters as racist and homophobic was a complete and total setup? Turkey seeks EU protection for its beef and lamb kebabs. Germany cries foul in defence of kebabs of veal. Which country is the don of doner kebabs? And what's it like to fight a general election without the resources of the big parties or the attention of the media? The leaders of the SDP, Rejoin EU, and the campaign coordinator for the Workers' Party debate. We're going to begin with the events in the British general election during the course of today. Rishi Sunak has said he was hurt and angry after Channel 4 News broadcast undercover filming last night featuring a volunteer for Nigel Farage's Reform UK using a racial slur against him.
When my two daughters have to see and hear Reform people who campaign for Nigel Farage calling me an effing it hurts and it makes me angry, and I think he has some questions to answer. And I don't repeat those words lightly. You know, I do so deliberately because this is too important not to call out clearly for what it is.
By happy coincidence, Nigel Farage was in Birmingham this evening, along with the co-leader of the Green Party, for Question Time. Our political correspondent, Hannah Miller, is there. Hannah, did Mr. Farage expand on his earlier expressed claim that the undercover investigation by Channel 4 was in some way a stitch-up?
I mean, really, what you heard tonight was Nigel Farage doubling down on that claim that this report was something of a stitch-up. Andrew Parker is an actor, and Nigel Farage clearly trying to claim that therefore there's some kind of thing that's gone on here to make his party look worse than he believes it is. Channel 4, we should say, stand by their journalism. They say they met Andrew Parker, who made those comments for the first time, when they went out canvassing with their undercover reporter. But we've heard Nigel Farage throughout today saying that he believes this was a stitch-up tonight. He made it very clear he's not going to apologise. He said, I promise you that what happened is a setup. This is what Nigel Farage said about Andrew Parker himself.
What I have no doubt about is this guy was in his alter ego. I've even found now on TikTok this guy doing sort of Alf Garnett type stuff. This was a comedy act, but it was designed to hurt us. And sadly, some people believe it. Let me promise you.
So who do you think would have done this, Nigel Farage?
I want nothing to do with people like him, and he has nothing to do with us.
It's worth saying some of those filmed making homophobic comments were known to Farage closer to him. He has said that they won't be involved in his campaign going forward. They, of course, were canvassers, but there has also been difficult questions for Reform UK about some of their candidates. And he was asked for quite some time tonight at the Question Time special about people who have made racist remarks and not been disowned by the party. At one stage, he appeared to distance himself live on air from one of the candidates. Let's just take a listen to that.
Why are they still standing as your candidate?
I inherited a start-up party. Remember, I've been doing
this... Why are they still standing as your candidates?
Well, they're not. They've been disowned. In most cases, they've been disowned. With people like Lily from... I mean, honestly, what he said is criminal.
So why is it your candidate?
Wrong. I have no idea why this man...
You are the leader.
I wasn't.
You are now.
I inherited this. It was a start-up party. I paid a professional London bedding company to weed this out. The work wasn't done.
I mean, you heard the laughter from the audience there. We have heard that argument several times from Nigel Farage as this issue of candidates has repeatedly come up over the last few weeks. The question on it really, I think, is whether people believe that it is true that he took up the leadership after the election had been called, or do people look at this and think, well, he was involved in founding Reform UK and is in some way responsible for the culture of the party in that sense, and that is very much a question for people to decide and for voters to decide as they think about how to vote.
Hannah, he was second up this evening because he was preceded by half an hour of questions from the audience to Adrian Ramsey, co-leader of the Green Party of England and Wales, and he too had a bit of a sticky exchange with Fiona Bruce over the views of some of his party's candidates.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The two smaller parties both facing questions about their candidates and that selection process as they try to stand people all across the country. The Green Party have had issues with some candidates. Some were withdrawn before the closure of the deadline for ballots. Others are still on the ballot paper with Green Party next to their name. And they were asked, Adrian Ramsay was asked about that, about the views of certain people who are standing for the Green Party.
It's just under a week now to the election. These three people, with the views that they have expressed, reportedly online, hoping the Royal Navy vessels sink, comparing Hamas to the French resistance, whatever your process is, I mean, these, I've been reading about these people for some time, they are going to go ahead on next Thursday in your name, and you're happy with that?
Well, I can't comment on what all 574
I'm not
candidates
asking you
across
to.
The country
I'm
are standing, and
three.
I'm not familiar with those three. What I can say is that if issues have been raised, they're being investigated internally. There have been a number of occasions where candidates have been asked to take down posts and have done so. And there have been other cases where candidates have been asked to withdraw or have been withdrawn.
The other main area where the Green Party's Adrian Ramsay faced a challenge tonight was about scrapping petrol and diesel cars by 2035, being asked how the party intends to recompense people for that and struggling to some extent to give a clear answer on that. But clearly tonight we had two parties who are not about to, their leaders are not about to become the next prime minister or anything like that, but they both want influence, and that's what tonight was really about, in a sense. Reform, of course, wanting to influence particularly the direction of the Conservative Party, the Greens hoping to take some votes from Labour, and if Labour form a government, hoping to be able to influence their policies there. It was really about that kind of influence going forward that we heard tonight.
Hannah Miller in Birmingham, thank you very much. Well, David Ball is the co-deputy leader of Reform UK. He's in the spin room at the Question Time debate, interpreting and explaining to journalists what Nigel Farage meant. Mr. Ball, thank you very much for staying on for fully over an hour after it all finished to talk to us this evening. We're grateful to you. We need to sort of get as far as we can with this situation of the remarks that were made by these two people filmed by Channel 4 News. Just before we deal with the circumstances, what would you say to Rishi Sunak's daughters if you had the opportunity to speak to them about those remarks which the Prime Minister found so deeply offensive?
Well, it's absolutely outrageous, isn't it? The fact is, I will not tolerate any homophobia, racism, Islamophobia or anything like that. Neither will Nigel, neither will Richard. And of course, if we find out, and when we find out those people exist and they support those views, they're out of the party. Let me be really clear,
though.
So
there are no ifs or buts on this.
Let me just be really clear.
I will give you the chance to, but can I just get clarity from what you were saying? Once you've identified who they are, if they are members of the party, they will be expelled. No ifs, no buts.
Correct.
Thank you.
100%.
What were you going to go on to say?
I was just going to say, look, this chap was a supporter of the party. Like all political parties, we don't vet supporters. So he turned up and delivered leaflets and started to canvass. And those comments are absolutely outrageous. There are lots of questions being asked about who this man was and what was his modus operandi. We believe, and we now know, he is an actor.
Yes.
He also specialises in surveillance and undercover work.
There were two people, though, who were filmed.
Well, let me answer.
I will let you answer, but I just want to be clear about this. You are talking about one person, the person who made the remark about the Prime Minister. I'm going to have to respectfully ask you to let me complete the question. The other person made a pretty offensive remark about the Pride logo being displayed by a police car, saying that this was, I think he used the word, degenerate. You're gay yourself, and you've said you won't tolerate homophobia. So let's leave Mr. Parker aside, because you're trying to establish his antecedents. What do you know about this other man?
Well, I actually have an issue with police cars having the Pride flag as well. I don't think it's appropriate.
But I'd not rather because you think
the
it's degenerate.
Were out doing their business. No, of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. And actually, I would say in our office, about half the people who work for us are gay in the main office. So that is not an issue. Look, these two people were caught on camera. What they said was unacceptable, and they have been asked to leave the party, which they have. Look, the point is, the reason I'm in the leadership team is because I and Richard and Nigel will not tolerate any of this. Let me be also very clear. The reason that we're getting all this flak is because we are doing so well. The latest poll that came out tonight shows that we are now at 21%. We are 3 points ahead of the Conservative Party. Now, Nigel had quite a rough ride tonight, I thought, but it was a metropolitan audience. When you go around the country, you hear something
Birmingham,
quite different,
a metropolitan,
let me tell
audience.
You. So,
from all over the West Midlands?
It is. Well, Birmingham is a metropolitan area, but when you
England's
go out
largest
about,
city,
in
but
Sunderland,
it's
we have
a diverse part of the country, isn't it?
Well, I suggest you get out a bit more and go around the country. If you go to rural areas of this country, people are absolutely sick and tired of what is going on in this country. Nothing works in this country. You can't see a GP, the schools, you can't get your kids into schools. There's no transport infrastructure. Adrian Ramsay made some very interesting comments, for example, about how we decarbonise. And he mentioned Suffolk. I live in Suffolk. There are no buses. You can't do it. He had no answers about cars. And actually, when you talk to people on the street, they are not interested in net zero. It is not top of the priority
David Ball,
list.
Co-deputy leader of Reform UK, thank you very much for being with us. We'll be hearing more about the net zero question a little later when we hear from three smaller parties who are discussing some of the issues in the general election campaign. Now, did last night's debate performance by Joe Biden against Donald Trump vindicate the 73% of Democrats, fully 86% of Americans, who in March told Ipsos for ABC that Joe Biden is too old to serve another term as President of the United States? The evening after the night before, Joe Biden has held an event in Raleigh in North Carolina to shore up his supporters. Or perhaps it was the other way around.
I don't walk as easy as I used to. I don't speak as smoothly as I used to. I don't debate as well as I used to. But I know what I do know. I know how to tell the truth. I know right from wrong. And I know how to do this job. I know how to get things done. I know, like millions of Americans know, when you get knocked down, you get back up.
Cue a burst of Chumbawamba. Ahead of President Biden's address, the BBC's North America correspondent, Nomi Iqbal, tested the mood among the activists.
Being 77 years of age myself, I don't see any reason why. He's still very good as a president. And most of the work that you do is done with advisors. So there's no reason to step aside simply because he's got a stutter.
President Biden, look at his record. We should not judge him based on one and a half hour debate. He was clearly not feeling best. We all have our bad days.
Well, his age is a concern. Yes, I would like to see a younger candidate, but it's not possible right now.
I did watch the debate last night. Maybe not our finest moment, maybe not the strongest debate I've ever seen, but it doesn't mean that today we need to second guess ourselves.
He didn't surpass our expectations, I think, most people's expectations. But we got to remember, we're not just voting for the president. We're voting for the administration. We're voting for our values. And Donald Trump doesn't support those.
That's the view in Raleigh. The correspondent for the BBC, Nomia Iqbal, is still there. Nomia, the activists rallying to the Biden flag, is that mood shared among senior members of the party?
It's split at the moment. I mean, there's various reports that strategists close to Democratic presidential candidates, potential ones, are now saying that they're being bombarded with messages and pleas for them to step forward as an alternative to Biden. We're also hearing that major Democratic donors are saying that it's time for his presidency to end. But President Biden's old boss, the former President Barack Obama, still one of the most popular figures in the party, he weighed in and he said, bad debate nights happen. Trust me, I know. Just referring to his own tough debate when he was up against the Republican Mitt Romney in 2012. He was, you know, criticized for appearing checked out. And of course, he went on to beat Romney in November. And I think the fact that Mr. Obama has come out to endorse Mr. Biden and praise him is proof that actually there are still a lot of key members in the Democratic Party who think that Mr. Biden should still be their man.
Naomi Iqbal in Rawley, thank you very much. Of course, there is a man and a woman on the Democrat ticket this time as last time. The Vice President, Kamala Harris, is a lot younger than the President and would be in a position to step forward were a vacancy to arise. So last night we spoke to Christine Pelosi, a strategist for the Democrats and an elected member of the party's executive committee in California. She joins us again. And also with us is Amanda Renteria, political director of Hillary Clinton's 2016 Democratic campaign. Lovely to have you both with us, notwithstanding the circumstances, which are difficult for your party right now. Amanda Renteria, I wonder what you made of last night's performance. I mentioned those poll figures. With that background, anything less than a sparkling, scintillating performance was going to reflect badly on the president, wasn't it?
Well, there's no doubt he had a tough start to that debate. But the underlying foundational messages that are out there of who he's fighting for, that he has your back, that he tells the truth, are there, not only for him as a candidate, but also for our party. And so it is important as we wake up the next morning and he gets back onto that stage and all the surrogates get involved and engaged. It's incredibly important to be talking about fundamentally what is the Democratic Party's vision. What are our candidates, not just the president, but all the way down ballot? How are they going to make sure that they are taking care of families, making sure that people have what they need in our country? And that's a big takeaway.
That's an admirable defense of the party's position. It doesn't really explain the problem that the president has, and it's been identified by multiple observers over the last few months, and it's been highlighted by those polling figures that Americans, the majority of Americans, do not believe that the president is capable of serving another 4 years. In what way did the performance last night answer that belief of voters?
Well, it certainly didn't give voters confidence. And I think that's what we're waiting for over these next couple of days, is how does this shake out? Not everybody watches the debate like I do in every single second and analyze
it. Sure, but you'll have looked, you'll have seen the networks today. They've been replaying the clips over and over again. In other words, even though he gave some perfectly decent answers, and even though people have pointed out President Trump told some untruths, to put it mildly, the clips that keep replaying are the ones of him stumbling, of him losing his thread, of him getting distracted and confused.
Yeah, that's true. And what you have on a campaign is every single day is a fight. And we really don't know over these next couple of days what voters are saying, what middle of the road voters are saying, even more importantly. And that's going to come out as this campaign moves along. He did have a good day today. But I think there is a lot of caution and worry. And that's the important part for the Democratic Party to really start considering. How much do they have to prepare? Is there a plan B? But for now, there's no need to be hasty and move quickly. But you do need to be prepared for what if we have another stumble? What if there is something like that? That really did get put on the table, unfortunately.
Christine Pelosi, you were fairly sanguine before the debate last night. How are you feeling now?
Well, I think Trump had a bad debate, and I think Biden's was worse. I think there's no sugarcoating it, as my friend Amanda Renteria said. Hello, Amanda. I think we're all pretty clear. He had a bad performance. But I also want to make clear that when you stumble, you get back up. That's the clip you played.
Yes.
That's the clip that heartens us. Here are the facts. I've been on the DNC as an elected member since the 90s. In 2010, it was Barack Obama should step down and let Hillary run in 2012. In 2012 was Barack Obama blew his first debate against Mitt Romney. In 2016, it was Hillary Clinton was too overprepared to be president.
But
2018, finished, Nancy Pelosi's too old to be speaker after she had won the House back for the Democrats.
Your mom, just in case people didn't realize.
Right.
Yeah.
AKA my mother and my congresswoman. But 2022, Fetterman has a stroke. They say we're going to lose the Senate. So we have seen this movie over and over again. And I think what we have to do is put the president, and this is what I've communicated to the leadership of the DNC. We want to see the president on TV. We want to see the president in a back
That's
and
very
forth
clear.
In press conferences and interviews,
can I offer
not just rallies.
Can
so
I offer
that
an
can
observation?
See if this was a one-off.
Can I offer an observation? With the honorable exception of your mother, every other one of those people you've quoted was a lot younger than President Biden. In other words, they had the advantage of being able to say, all right, I'm not very well at the moment, but I can bounce back. The doubt that appears to be in the minds, not just of Republican voters and of online voters, but even of Democrats, underlined by yesterday, you would surely acknowledge, is that he can't bounce back in the way that a younger man or woman could.
Well, of course he can't bounce back the way younger Joe Biden did from the tragedies in his own life. But the question is, can he still lead this country? And we believe that he can. And he showed Americans the vigor of that today.
Is it possible that he could decide, as Lyndon Johnson did in 1968, actually, I need to make way for somebody else?
No.
Nope.
I mean, is it Amanda? Humanly possible anyone can make any decision, Amanda? But not on the basis of these facts?
Amanda?
Yeah, I think, I mean, anyone, I agree with Christine, anyone can make that decision. I think you really do have to look at what the numbers are telling you out there. And I think Biden well knows that he has got to make sure that he is leading a party so that everyone down ballot can also win. And Amanda, I think what everyone woke up with today in the Democratic Party is they got to do their part too, Amanda, down ballot, to make sure the vision of the Democratic Party is out there.
Amanda Renteria, Christine Pelosi, apologize for cutting you short. We're a bit up against it tonight. Thank you both very much for giving us your time. I should just say in passing that when CBS asked Nancy Pelosi about calls from some Democrats that Mr. Biden should be replaced, she said, I'll make a statement about this, but not right now. Now, let's move on to a minor diplomatic dispute that could turn out to be a lot bigger as the days progress. It's over the humble kebab. German kebab makers are pushing back against a Turkish request to grant EU protection to their version of the doner kebab, risking a diplomatic spat over the dish. Perhaps it's the fault of President Steinmeier, who paid a recent visit to Istanbul with a pillar of doner meat weighing 60 kilograms in the cargo hold of his plane. Or perhaps of President Erdogan, never shy of rallying nationalists to the flag as part of his muscular diplomacy. Which country then is the don of the doner kebab? I've been speaking to two enthusiasts, Ibrahim Dogus, founder of the British Kebab Awards, and the German sociologist Eberhard Zeidel, author of two books on the cultural history of doner. Yes, two books. But first I asked Ibrahim Dogus what he thought lay behind Turkey's kebab power grab.
I think the thinking behind this is more about doner becoming so popular across Europe and across the world in a way, and Turkey feeling that it is their responsibility to make sure that the cultural importance of doner kebab for the communities in Turkey is protected.
Eberhard, it sounds perfectly reasonable when it's put like that, doesn't it? Doner kebab originated in the Ottoman Empire. It only came to Germany with Turkish migrants in the 1970s. Isn't it fair enough for the Turkish version to be protected?
No, it's not fair enough. The German doner is different, and it's a development started by Turkish immigrants in Germany about 50 years ago, and it's a new edition of the doner. The doner kebab as a doner sandwich is not originated in Turkey, because in Turkey you usually in the past ate the doner kebab at a plate in a restaurant and not standing in the street. And that's a new development came from Germany and spread all over Europe.
Ibrahim Dogus, there is an argument for saying, isn't there, that different immigrant communities, when they bring their national dishes with them in their new countries, they change them. They make them a bit different. And that difference is something to celebrate, not something to suppress.
Of course. I mean, I get that. Ingredients change, products change, the way we do things change. It's all true. But it originates from the country and it was innovated by communities from Turkey. So it only makes sense for the country to apply for this protected status. But I would be happier if Turkey can consult Germany, Britain, and many other countries who now have a claim over the product, because it is part of all our cultures now.
Eberhard, what is it you in Germany fear losing if the European Commission were to accept this proposal, which has been made via the Turkish government?
For example, most of the doner kebabs could not call them doner, because in Germany, most of the doner kebabs made out of veal, not of beef. And this Turkish company wants that every doner has to be made out of beef and lamb. The German doner is different from the Turkish doner. So what's the problem?
Ibrahim Dogus, what is the problem?
The clue is in the name of the dish. The name is doner kebab. Doner is a word in Turkish, which means rotating. It is important for us to find a way to make this a product, a dish that is belong to all of us culturally. But I do not see a problem in Turkish government trying to get protected status for this product.
You don't think it's politics?
I don't think it's politics in a way, because we in Britain, we do the best doner kebab in the whole world, better than Germany, better than Turkey. We are not trying to get a protected status for the dish as a British product, because we know where it's originating from. Same thing in Germany. Germany should be able to work with Turkish authorities and, you know, raise their concerns or issues, but they shouldn't see no harm in Turkey trying to protect, you know, trying to claim or apply for a protected status for the doner kebab.
Ibrahim is saying it shouldn't really be a problem, yet judging by the newspapers in Germany, it really is a big problem. People are feeling that it threatens them. Can you explain why?
Because we have summer now, and we have to talk about something.
The football is still
going
on.
Some problems, if there are no problems. Look, you know Hamburger. Like the name says, it's originated in Germany. But we don't try to make a European law that say a hamburger sold at McDonald's or Burger King or in other places should be have these ingredients. The döner kebab spread all over the world, not from Turkey, from Germany.
Well, let me ask you finally then, on that basis and in the spirit of compromise, Eberhard, would you eat a British doner kebab?
I ate my first doner kebab in London in 1976 as a student. That was my first doner kebab.
Ibrahim, would you eat a German doner kebab, even if it's made of veal?
I had veal kebabs in Germany. They're delicious, they're tasty. People who are working in the industry within Germany are doing a great job. No questions about that. But what I would do is I would urge British government now to jump in and say, no, it's not German, it's not Turkish, it's British.
Ibrahim Doğuş and Eberhard Zeidel are resolving that diplomatic dispute. Now, back to the general election. Three political parties you won't have heard much from on air, but each of whom is fielding multiple candidates. We thought you should hear from them. William Clouston, leader of the Social Democrats, the SDP. Brendan Donnelly, leader of the Rejoin EU party. And first, Hoz Shafi, National Campaign Coordinator for the Workers' Party of Britain. He's a member of a small, relatively new party. It was launched by George Galloway. How does the Workers' Party manage a campaign when it's standing in just a quarter of constituencies?
We only get the reach that we get through Twitter, Facebook and places like that. But social media does not reach into people's homes. I mean, there is a political group of people that have already decided what they're going to vote. Those people, when they receive my tweet, are not going to change their mind.
We've been rather encouraged in the Rejoin EU party by the number of young people who are engaging with us on social media. And that corresponds to the demographic of younger people who, on the whole, are more likely to want to rejoin.
William Clouston of the SDP, where do you sit in this view of social media? Is it useful? Is it an opportunity to change people's minds? Or is it kind of peripheral to the main campaign, which is still dominated by the newspapers and perhaps more importantly these days by television?
I look at it the other way, really. I think we do a lot of work on political Twitter. We're very active there and we have been for a long time on Facebook, and our YouTube channel is well patronised. But really, the general election is an opportunity for us to go much further than that. And again, on the TV channels that I appear on reasonably regularly, which is GB News and Talk TV, the listeners and the viewers of those channels know us, really. So this has been a great opportunity for us to get further. And actually, I was very pleased to see the BBC turn up at the SDP's national manifesto launch a couple of weeks ago in Leeds at the Working Men's Club. That took us to another dimension.
But once in 5 weeks, I just wonder if that feels to you like fair coverage.
Well, I think we'd always want more. I think it's, I mean, I share the irritation of the other two guests on this piece.
Hoz Shafi.
I just want to say my experience for my party has been the manifesto launch was the only time that the BBC, ITV, Sky and GB News came over, and they all gave, well, GB News gave a live audience to George, like a live, call it what you will, it was like 5 minutes of trying to attack him. But other than that, we've not been on GB News. We've not been on Talk. I was on Politics Live for 4 minutes and 2 seconds. And after 4 minutes and 2 seconds, I was basically asked to leave. And I did leave, because that's what happens when you're asked to leave. And I just don't think it's fair.
Yeah. My objection is not so much not being coverage of the Rejoin EU party as there not being coverage of the Rejoiner U issue. And that reflects the, in my view, rather limited bubble in which the political class exists in symbiosis, if you like, with its journalistic reflectors. It's disgraceful that when more than 50% of British opinion, apparently, consistently in opinion polls, wants to rejoin the European Union, that's not something which is being offered by any party seriously.
Right, let's talk about issues. The first one is relations with Europe insofar as it affects things like the economy and also migration. Hoshafi?
So I was going to push back a little bit, if I can, with Brendan, and to do with Brexit and to do with where we are as a country today. We are 4 years, 5 years away from when Brexit actually took place, and we had a reconfirmation of the will of the people in 2019 in the general election that Boris Johnson won with a massive majority. And my position as a Remainer is that I respect democracy. We have to give the opportunity for Brexit to whatever form it's going to take in the end to be allowed to become what it's going to become. If it does not work, and it's going to need more than 4 or 5 years for this, because it could take 10 years, then we have to give the opportunity for those people who did vote for it, and the difference now compared to what it was back then is, you know, it's irrelevant.
Before I bring Brendan in, I just want to bring William in at that point. What's the SDP position of this? Because Europe was one of the issues on which the founders of the SDP broke with the Labour Party. I know that's a long time ago, and there's a lot of water flowed under a lot of bridges since then. But are you still essentially a pro-European party?
We're a pro-European party, but we're not a pro-EU party. Our position has tracked that of Lord Owen, actually. No, we're strongly in favour of Brexit. I think if you profess social democracy as political philosophy, you can't join a trade cartel which prevents the very thing that you profess to want to implement. I would ask people, if your state can't keep a steelworks open under the rules, then you're not living in a democracy. So I take a sort of Benite, Shoreite view on this.
Good for you.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. And I don't think most people in the Rejoin EU party would either. What we'd say is that every time you have a general election, democracy is on the table again. People can change their minds. And it's up to them when they change their minds. I think it's wholly arbitrary to say you've got to wait for 10 or 20 or 30 years before you know whether Brexit has worked.
Right, let's talk about one other issue that has had a lot of attention, and that's migration. Hos, from the point of view of the Workers' Party, it's clearly been a source of a lot of unease to people in traditional working class jobs, the impact of migration. What's your party's position on that now?
Anyone who's in the country right now is welcome to stay here. Anyone who's here and has basically got their paperwork sorted out, and even if they haven't got their paperwork sorted out and are here right now because they've got on a boat and whatever else, we draw a line and that's it. That's who's here. What we want to do is we don't want to have all of these boats coming over with all these people on it. And what we need to do is basically think about what are these people doing when they come here? If they actually contribute to our civil society, if they help build our country into a better place, then I'm happy for them to be here.
Are they suppressing wages, in your view?
100%. Because when you've got cheap labour here and it means big business gets away with paying people not the right amount of money.
William Clouston, the SDP.
I largely agree with Mr. Shafi there. I think he's broadly right. There's no doubt at all that mass immigration has been used over many, many years as a drug to plug short-term problems in a dysfunctional labour market in the UK. It's also discouraged training. You know, when we were in the single market and freedom of movement, there was no incentive for British employers or government to train anyone because you could rely on a massive pool of labour. But there's a further thing, which is culture. And people won't talk about the massive demographic social changes that have happened. Most British people agree with the SDP on this. We need to take a break, have a pause, probably a generational-long pause to get to know each other.
Brendan Donnelly of Rejoin EU. I mean, you're very clear in your manifesto, the resumption of EU freedom of movement would swiftly alleviate the serious shortage of essential and able workers in uncongenial and low-paid sectors.
That's absolutely right. In the present state of the British economy, we do need migration. Now, I'm not at all against better training and better wages and all sorts of things to do in order to improve the situation. But at the moment, we do need migration. And the migration model of freedom of movement was a much better one for this country than the present migration model, which may well lead to people staying indefinitely in this country and perfectly legitimately then calling on Social Security later in lives and the National Health Service. Also, I think we mustn't confuse the question of legal migration with potentially illegal migration. And then there's another question of people seeking asylum. And those three are often run together.
The obvious question to ask all of you is, do you believe that we are moving away from a kind of two-party duopoly?
So, you know, I think there's no doubt at all. The depth of the support for these establishment parties is very weak. I'll make a prediction here. I think by the end of the decade, people will be crying out for a change in the voting system to allow a new entrance into this rotten political system.
Hos Chaffee.
1997, we had Labour for 13 or 14 years. We've had Tories from 2010 to 2024. It's the same two parties doing exactly the same thing, and it's not helping people. The metric for me that upsets me more than anything else is that after we're in the 30-year highest levels of poverty in our country, the gap between the rich and the poor has never been as wide as it is, and I can't see any difference with Labour in charge or Tories, because none of them have got policies that will help the poorest people in our society. That's what we've got to look at.
But the reasons that have been put forward of fairness, we're in favour of proportional representation, but we're also in favour of proportional representation because we think it will make it easier for us to remain in the European Union once we get back. It won't be a question of the Conservatives getting in with 35% of the vote and jerking us out of the European Union again. So we have another particular reason in favour of PR.
Brendan Donnelly of Rejoin EU, the SDP's William Clouston, and Hos Chaffee from the Workers' Party of Britain. I'm Sean Lay. That's The World Tonight. Good night and have a restful weekend.